Recovery On Air, the official podcast of Crossroads Addiction Rehabilitation. Candid discussion about addiction and recovery with the people who have lived it, along with input from experts on the journey from struggle to triumph. Laugh, cry, and be inspired. And now, your host for Recovery On Air, Donna Alexander.
Welcome to Recovery On Air, the show in which we try to break the stigma of addiction by talking about it. I am your host, Donna Alexander.
And I am your guest host, Marcus Wisebly.
We are so happy today to be welcoming into the studio Jeff Bradford. He is a member of the Board of Directors for Crossroads and the President of the Board of Directors of Crossroads, Adam Miller. Welcome, you guys. Thank you for coming in and agreeing to do this show.
Thanks for having us, Donna.
So one of the things that I wanted to do, and I think that is important for our listeners to know, is the diversity of our board. So I'm going to just throw it out there right now. So Adam, you are what we term as a normie.
Yes.
And Jeff,
that
you have
of diversity.
I know. Yes. And Jeff, you have a little bit of a story of recovery.
A lot of a story of recovery and a lot worse of a story of addiction. Yes.
Yes. So we're going to start off with you a little bit, Adam, first. I know that in some of our previous conversations, you were talking about being able to say, like, how things started out, what you've seen change about Crossroads over the last 6 years that you've been on the board of directors. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. Actually, I first was introduced to Crossroads when it was still a halfway house. I used to go to their galas, and that's where I met a person who's a former member and a future member of our board, Ken Williamson.
Yes.
And offered my assistance, and about 5 years later, he called me up and said, "Hey, remember about 5 years ago you said if you ever wanted to help? Well, we need some help." So I was introduced to the board of Crossroads, and when I started it, Crossroads had just turned it into a treatment center.
Yes.
And they were just starting to actually do the treatment according to the healthcare codes and all that stuff versus a halfway house. And I think we had maybe about 250 beds at the time, and we were doing okay. We're, you know, solvent and doing all right. Whereas today we have over 400 beds, and Crossroads is very healthy financially and is developing nice young leaders to take Crossroads into the next century.
I agree with you there about the leaders. And so, Marcus, a little bit, hear from you just a little bit, although you're the host, I'm going to throw you out there right now. So Adam was talking about the 400 plus beds that we have for residential. Can you tell us just a little bit about some of the other programs that we have now?
Sure. So we, on top of our 400 residential beds, we have also incorporated a full encompassing outpatient program. With the changes that have happened in the world with COVID and everything, telehealth became very prevalent. So we adapted as Crossroads does and created a intensive outpatient patient treatment program that is able to serve members that don't necessarily have the readily access to travel or make it to one of our facilities. So same style of treatment, same modalities that we use at our facilities are now offered over Skype, Zoom, whichever mode a member is able to access. So that way, location does not serve as a barrier for individuals seeking recovery.
Nice. And Jeff, since you have a story of recovery, do you also have a story about detox?
Yeah, not one that I would share, but I didn't detox it with Crossroads, but
right.
I did the old granddad St. Luke's. But
That's okay, because this is the thing that's leading into the next part, is that we're going to be opening that door pretty soon, and it's already been
right.
put out there. So
nice segue.
So why don't you talk a little bit about your experience with detox, and then we're going to talk maybe a little bit to Adam and to Marcus about what it's going to look like for Crossroads to have detox.
Well, I remember detox. What I do remember is it being awful, and that I thought I was just going to detox and then go back out. that's I do remember that. It's important to me to remember what it was like in the very beginning.
Yes,
because all the crazy thoughts that we thought were just perfectly not only rational but more rational than everybody who was trying to get me into a hospital. Detox is a, I think I was scared about us doing detox, but we've just developed our staff and our CEO and the people that we've hired, which is really what the board's job is. I'd like to take credit for it, but I'm just, it's so, they're so excellent. And one of the things I like most about our staff and how important it is in detox is to have what we call peers. We call them peer counselors and stuff like that. And that's an important part of even first responders now to with addiction crisis and people in who are going through a crisis early with either overdosing or trying to recover. So having people that can relate and that they can relate to is more than important. I think it's absolutely necessary. And that's the important part of detox, keeping them not just medically cleared, but moving to the next step. That's an important part of it.
Yeah, and I think having the detox available will definitely make sure that we don't lose those people who come in and are required to go through detox before they come to the facilities. We're able to capture that. And that detox is probably a very different model from the peer support model that we have in our facilities, because it does have to be medically supervised. It is much more strict. And the way that we set it up and the way it's been planned, Crossroads is a very conservative and very risk-averse organization. And it looked at all the different angles. And as Jeff said, the entire board sort of got nervous when we started talking about detox because of all the risks.
Yes.
Better to be nervous up front than nervous after the fact.
Yes, sure. We spent a lot of time talking about it. Yep. And it was definitely well thought out. It's heavily regulated. And we are definitely have hired the right staff and built the right facility to be able to house the detox in a way that is going to be as safe as it possibly can, and obviously supervised medically as much as it needs to be.
And I think, for a lot of years since I've been around with Crossroads, we've always talked about having the full wraparound service. And for the first time since I've been here, and what I believe the history of Crossroads, we are going to be able to offer that full wraparound, that the individuals that I see and serve every morning don't have to leave property to go to detox, and we lose them in that transition period.
Yep. And vice versa.
Correct. And and the piece of detox being regulated and needing the medical professionals to oversee it because of the risk that is involved, to minimize that risk is important. But to touch on what Jeff said, they are first interacted with a peer, directed where to go into detox, and then interacted with a peer upon exiting detox. And so it's that comfortability that they are offered all the way through, and knowing that they show up at our corporate office, go into a detox, walk right out that day when they're cleared and they're placed in a bed. And there's no time for error or mistake or fleeting thoughts like Jeff had alluded to of it happens a lot that an individual goes to detox and they get 3, 4, 5 days under their belt and they think, I'm good.
More than a lot.
Probably 60-70% of people who enter detox think, hey, I've got this under control. I just needed to get over that hump.
Exactly.
Yep.
Do you know, I think one of the things too for me that this is going to help a lot is like when I was at Flower and we would have somebody that needed to go to detox. So we would call for their ride. The ride would show up. And I can't tell you how many times they would call back and say, okay, we stopped at a red light and they jumped out the van.
Yeah. Or they weren't there when the van got there.
Yes, or they drop them off at whatever detox center and they never even make it inside. So I think for us to now have the way that it's set up, that at admissions, we're able to have the peer person or a trained professional that's in our admissions department take a look at this person, do an assessment, and walk them around the building into the detox center.
Well, the other piece we're also putting in is the newest facility that's going to be coming on board is Scottsdale.
Yes.
And, when we start doing this and we have our fearless leader, our executive director, come in and say, well, I have an idea for this because of the way that treatment is going and where it's going. And we're actually trying to revert back to what we call our roots.
Yes.
And which was really a halfway house, somewhere where people live, they get a job, they start getting back into the community. And for a long time, the board has wanted to get back to that model to give back. But Lee is finding a way to deliver services in various forms, either in person or you know, over the internet, and being able to give that last piece where they come out of one of our facilities and then they have somewhere they can go to sort of transition back into the community in a safe place. And I think to have a safe place to be is so important. You know, the people after 3 or 4 detox think they have it, but if they go back into the same environment they always went back into, sometimes that's the trigger that then they don't make it. And to be in a safe place for 30, 60, 90 days or longer is what it really takes a lot of people to really catch on to say, this is hard work, but it's worth it.
And that's what, and the back end, and the vertical integration that we did isn't a business decision. It's a reality of recovery.
Yes.
The back end, if even after a 30 or I did a 90 day detox and away in the woods, away from everything I knew, and still that 91st day when I flew back, it was a dangerous time.
Yes.
So I use the term vertical integration, which has a very business perspective idea, but the idea that we have people who they can, when they come in off the street, they have people like Marcus or Fleetwood Mac that that we call that can relate to them and can talk to them like they were, you know, who know what they've been through, who know what they're going through, and can soothe that, because you don't want to go in. I mean, because we have doctors and nurses and professional staff, and some of them are recovery, but that's not the relationship there. Doesn't they can't be that.
Right.
They can't be what our peer support can be. It's a necessary part of a recovery, one that we recognized and keyed on as a company. As a crossroads. That was one of the things I was as an organization that we got on right away. You need alcoholics and addicts to talk to alcoholics and addicts to pull them through, and it's a necessary part of the 12-step program. It's what that's all based on.
Talking them off a ledge.
And talking them and keeping them in the chairs and keeping them in the beds and then keeping them. And we have a detox center that's right across from our. From our intake, and right down the hall, was going to be right down the hall from their beds for the 60 days, and then after that, we can take them right to the sober living, which and Adam keeps saying halfway house, and that's they hated that when I came in. that's an old kind of mode. It was sober living. What it was, and we took people at the beginning when I started about a year or two after you, but when it was first mostly a sober living facility, which is that transition.
Transitional living.
Transitional living is what they call it, which is
level four license.
What our people call it, as opposed to halfway house. But it's really what it was, a halfway house. But,
yes.
But that's the important part. Learning how to live again a new way.
But the secret sauce has always been, as you said, the peer support.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because there are other models out there and they're successful. But what really Crossroads has done is really developed its staff from former customers, if you
yes.
will.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family. Our clients become our staff, and our staff serve the exact same individual who they were 30, 60, 90 days prior to them coming in and becoming staff. And, you know, that's why this model works, that the people that are here have one concept, and that is help the next person. Whatever it takes, doesn't matter. I will go to any limit that I have to ensure that individual has a fair chance at recovery.
And I think from a board perspective, every board member knows that, and it's why they're willing to serve, and they're willing to give back to the community, because they know everybody who's on that staff is actually giving back in a way from something that they've received. And I think that's one of the key elements that brings our board together is, no matter how we agree or disagree on anything, we always look back and say, hey, we're here to help.
Exactly. That's what,
You know,
that talks us off the ledge.
And as you guys have been talking, everybody, like Jeff touched on it, and so have you, Adam and Marcus as well, that everybody has their role at Crossroads. Like, we need those medical people. We need those independently licensed substance abuse counselors. You know, but when I was at Flower, I had a girl, a newcomer, tell me one day, she said, Donna, I don't want to talk to that person with initials behind their name. I want to talk to that girl. And she pointed to one of the peers. And she said, because she's been on the same streets of Phoenix as I have, in 120 degrees, barefoot, looking for her next John so she can get her next fix. And now look where she is. I want to know how she got there. I want to know it from a book. And I was like, wow. You know, that was a real eye-opener for me. Right. I knew how important our peer support were. But for that to be put into a nutshell like that, was very eye-opening and educational for me. Learned the best stuff from newcomers.
That's true on the whole spectrum. That's true from the, you know, $200,000 or $500,000, now $500,000 a year CEO who's got a pill problem and been drinking all day long for 10, 15 years and thinks that's the way of his life. While he may have a better interaction with a professional like a medical professional, he's still going to need to have someone that relates to his history.
Yes.
And our people and the people who come that are our home staff, our family staff that are we hire from within. I hate to use such business terms all the time, but the business model that we have, which probably came about organically as we were doing it. It's not like someone came in and had that brilliant idea firsthand. They probably realized it after, oh, wait, this is the way.
Right.
But that's the way I'm looking forensically always back at things. But they can relate to the same thing because they have some shared experiences. But it doesn't matter whether it's a you know, a $40 a day habit living homeless to living in a penthouse.
Right.
Like the penthouse up here. Addiction is addiction, and they can both relate, and our peer staff can talk to them all.
The misery is the same.
Yep.
Right?
And yes. They can relate to that.
Doesn't matter if you pull up in a city bus or in a Maserati, right? The displeasure and the disdain that you have for yourself on the inside is universal throughout all of addiction.
And they all need to be related to, like our peer review people do.
Which is why the peer model and the group model and building your own community of safety. So many people I've seen, you know, when they're going through or they're just through treatment is have you gone through IOP afterwards? Have you gone through aftercare?
Right.
Are you building your own community of safe people? Not that everybody you're going to meet is going to change your life, but if you know where the safe people are and people you can pick up the phone and call or instant message or go on Facebook and whatever you want to do, however you want to contact, if you know that there's somebody who is safe out there that you can reach out to, as Jeff said, you know, this path has been done by many.
It's a great point. Right, Crossroads is not going to be immune to the turnover rate that happens with clients that go through detox. We are going to see that just as any other detox does. Now, maybe less frequent because of it being on the same location as our admissions department. However, alluding to what you just touched on, those individuals are going to get, as we in the recovery community say, the seed planted. They're going to know this is a safe place to go. I can go here and get detox. And now that I am ready, I've gone through enough trouble over the last few weeks, months, whatever it was that I went back out, that I know I'm ready to go back and do the whole process now. That my way for the 1,000th, 100th time, whatever, did not work once again. It's time that I take some advice.
Yeah, when you introduce somebody to Crossroads, you just say, I can get you here. The rest is up to you.
Right. And, you know, I think, too, that we're also not immune to some of those relapses or some of those bumps that are in the road for even sometimes our staff. I think the great thing about Crossroads is, though, is that we are a family. And I know that recently there was a staff member who came back to the facility. And as Marcus said, that seed was already planted. He told me after I got past the ego part of this thing, I knew where I needed to be. I knew where I was safe. I knew where my family was, and I knew where I could get recovery. And what I was doing was not working. So now it's time to try it the way the Crossroads says to do it, you know?
It happened yesterday. I readmitted a staff member that I had just let go 6 weeks prior for getting high. Not once did I ever bat an eye or judge him or anything. It's, again, right? Crossroads mission from the president of the board to the night manager that got hired yesterday. Our mission is the exact same. And that is when there is a person that is in need and a person that is wanting help, Crossroads will be there to help.
When I hear that story, I'm just thankful that he made it back.
That's what I told him. Yep.
It just brings happiness to me to know that they made it back.
Exactly what was echoed to him. You know, I'm glad you were able to get here.
And you know, I actually talked to that person yesterday, and one of the very first things he said to me is, I can't believe, and I'm so grateful for everybody that's here that had their arms open to me when I came back. Because he was the gentleman that said about the ego thing.
Yep.
And that's it. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it does not matter. This disease will take over anytime it so chooses. If we don't work our program. So Jeff, how much of your story are you going to talk to us about?
You want me to give a share?
I want you to give a share.
Gosh, it's actually been a while since I've shared,
especially among people. See, this is perfect.
Hi, my name's Jeff. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
I've been sober, technically sober, for almost 12 years, 11 and a half years.
Nice.
I've been good at it for about 7 years. I was not good at it the first 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
I didn't get clean and recover and do my initial sobriety with Crossroads. But I can tell you that Crossroads was an integral part of me enjoying going to meetings and enjoying being in recovery and adapting to the lifestyle, because I was fighting it for 3-4 years. I was a miserable person at recovery, and I still wanted to go back, and I technically thought I would. I was going to prove everybody wrong. It was only by sheer dumbness that I was able to stay away from, I was bad at it, horrible at it. I liked going to meetings at Crossroads because, and let me bring up another angle. What we do, like all recovery centers and all organizations, we have public meetings, 12-step meetings for NA, CA, AA, all the different 12-step organizations meet in our bigger facilities. And it gets a chance for the people who are there to integrate and go to meetings with people. And like I did when I was in my 90-day program, meet the people who are in recovery, who are out in the world. So that's where I got initially into it. And I loved, and I was meeting the guys because I was over at East. And I just thought, wow, what a great organization. I wish I had had this. You know, I wish I had this sober living. I wish I'd had this. And I started doing more and more with the staff there. And that's kind of how, and eventually they suckered me into being on the board. But I digress, I guess, or I guess on purpose probably. But the most important part of my recovery is, like I said before we started, me remembering what it was like in the beginning. How I thought I could never, there was no way I could ever live without alcohol. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe I could live without drugs, but I never thought there was a life for me without alcohol. And the reality of that to an addict, whatever their drug or poison is, alcohol or drugs, especially with the harder street drugs and the pervasive intensity of the street drugs that they're getting now, the reality is just not something they can see. They just can't see the other side. So that first months and then years are the hard ones. And then until you like being around people who are sober and going to meetings and working on your sobriety, until you like it, from my perspective, you're not gonna be good at it, your lifestyle's not gonna be great. It wasn't until I got socialized to be sober, like I was socialized back in to get drunk and use drugs, that my life became, now that's where I can't imagine going back. And that was where I wasn't successful at it until I realized this is so much better and I'm not going back.
Right.
Socialization, being around people that were sober and had kept doing it.
People in general.
But they actually have fun.
No. There's people out there that I don't want to be around. And but it's sober people and happy sober people and the unhappy sober people too.
Yeah.
I've had more fun around sober people than I've ever had in my life.
Right.
They're the funniest, wackiest, craziest, whatever. There's just not that ingredient of the addiction
right.
that has to be there.
A little bit of brain damage.
Yeah. We all have a lot of brain damage. Once somebody figures out you're not perfect, all the pressure's off.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, Jeff, my story started too. I did not do my initial recovery at Crossroads either. I started in Montana at a treatment center, and I stayed there a year out of this environment so that I could get my feet underneath me. You know, and for a lot of people, they say, the geographical is not good for me. It happened to be exactly what I needed. I needed to get out of the middle of that, and then I went there. So when I first came back, I used to go to Crossroads West all the time for the meetings you're talking about.
And the food.
Oh, the food. Popeye would give me soup. I would go to the noon meeting, and then I would sit on the patio. And for the longest time, I had no idea it was a male treatment facility. I just didn't know. What I did know is that I was safe, and that those people talked the way I talked, and they felt the way I felt, and they were trying to do the same thing, like Marcus touched on, that mission. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the mission of somebody that's in new recovery is to try to figure out the socialization, to build the herd, get in the middle of the herd.
Be like the people. You know, go after that's what we say earlier in the program. Attach yourself to the people that have what you want.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's the social, I don't mean to cut you off, but you were going
absolutely
straight there.
And that's, you know,
that guy
a sponsor
has what I want. Yeah.
A sponsor, that's what I did. I found one at Crossroads West, you know, and she was a very integral part of my recovery process. Even after I started working with somebody else on the steps, she was one of my very best friends, and we lost her last year, I think from COVID, but it was before all that stuff happened. But, you know, these people that we get to run across, you meet people for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. At least that's one of the things that I've learned in my recovery process. And each one of those people definitely has their spot there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, going into, and I'm not sure really how many, because the other treatment facility that I was at here in town did not have open meetings on their property. You could leave, but they didn't actually have them at the facility. So I think that might be unique to us as well.
What do you mean leave? You can just go back to your business.
No,
that doesn't seem like a proper business.
You know what?
Not for my way of doing it.
It wasn't
one of those
for
little
me.
White vans and go to the meeting.
We call them the druggy buggies. Yes. That's the official name for it.
It wasn't a good thing for me. It did not. I was not successful at that treatment facility once I left. I did not do well.
Yeah, and I think integrating with other people that have, you know, that are successful, that are going to meetings, that are no longer inactive. Well, you can't say active treatment lasts forever, but in a facility or something, it is an important part of it, right?
Yes.
Marcus, when you were there, you were going to seeing people who had a year, 2 years, 3 years, who were still coming around for lunch?
Yes. Not only lunch, but, you know, at Tuesday night men's stag.
Oh my gosh, what a rough meeting that is.
Saved my life. You know, some people love it, some people hate it. But again, right, it's that integral part that you're talking about of learning how to interact with all walks of life again. And I only said with people in general, because when I was getting sober initially, I didn't want to be around anybody.
Oh, no. Yeah.
The thing that I found the most comfort in was isolating. And you go to a large meeting with outside people who have multiple months or years of recovery, even 3 weeks is longer than I had when I showed up.
Sure.
And seeing what I saw there is the reason I still work for Crossroads today.
You saw people that had what you wanted.
I saw a light in their eyes.
Yeah.
And I never
that's what you wanted. Or maybe you didn't even know it then, but you saw people who were, that guy was just like me, and now he's like this.
Yes.
That's what the program is, and that's what we sell.
But your support.
There was also a lot of disbelief that they ever had it as
agreed.
Bad as I
agreed.
Sure.
Right?
Agreed.
Absolutely. Right? No one could be as bad as me. No one's like me.
Terminal uniqueness,
and
right?
And then you realize, that, wait a minute.
And then you hear them share and you know only somebody that has been through that can share and talk about something the way that that human being just did. And then you start to open up a little bit because they have something. I don't know how, but I'm going to listen. Because they know more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you were touching on the ego piece is getting out of your own way is a common phrase. And just being able mm-hmm. to understand that you know very little and that there are individuals that know a little bit more than you do. And they might be the ones that you want to listen to.
I find that as the more I'm in this program, the less I know. Yep. And today I'm okay with that, you know? I'm totally okay with that.
I think the public meetings are not as big of a part as the peer review and our hiring from within of our organization, but an important part of it. And you know, it came about organically too on its own. I guess this wasn't a master plan by some brilliant recovery industrialist, you know, who decided this is the way to do it and this risk. They learned as they went along. And they said, bring in people for meetings and have peer support, people who are newly recovered to talk to these people. They learned. And
yeah.
We've been around for a long time, Crossroads, in one way or another. Since, Adam, we should probably know this more, but I'm picturing the pictures from the 50s and 60s. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Yes, we have those. Yes. Amazing, yeah. Rich history that Crossroads has.
So we have a time to learn it and how to do it right, and now we're perfecting it.
Right.
Well, and one of the things that the board members, especially new board members, when they come on, they don't know about what we call the secret sauce, and they don't know about what has to be protected at all costs.
Yes.
And as people come up with new ideas, or why can't we do, or can we do this, and we might be able to do it, but we have to figure out how to do it what we call the Crossroads way.
Correct.
Right.
And we're coming up and saying, you know what? If you do the right things, good things will follow.
Right.
And that's the way we've done a lot through trial and error. We've tried a lot of different things, and they found a formula that works. And protecting that formula and having the board members understand that you can't just take a business aspect look at it.
Right.
You actually have to look at what the process is and what we're really doing here. And the rest will follow. And I think our staff and Marcus here is one of them, they find ways to make things work the Crossroads way.
Right.
And it's a secret, but it's not a secret.
Right.
But it's also, are you doing the right things for the right reasons? So sometimes we have to break it down in our meetings, especially if there's a disagreement about a topic or whatever, and say, what is the right thing? And are we doing it for the right reason?
Right.
Right. And that's true. That's what we do. And what do we always come back to? Our mission statement.
That's right.
That's what we're supposed to do legally. And it's just a nice touchstone for us to get along. And we feel both because of the success we've had in the last 5 years at making our secret sauce. I keep going back to business terminology, our business model that's made so successful for us. Now we're in a position with the world, especially in the last year, where we have a huge responsibility to manifest and take our business model and get out and try to help as many people as we can. And that is an extension of the program itself, but it's what our business model is based on.
Right.
So we feel, and we say it every time, and these are people, you know, there's several other people who are in recovery, but I mean, these are regular people who've had, you know, what we call civilians.
Normies
or civilians that realize that the crisis that we're going through, and we were going through crisis before the COVID, but COVID threw gasoline on the fire. And then of course, fentanyl threw fentanyl on the fire. Fentanyl is the gasoline.
For sure.
That's the kerosene.
Yeah, kerosene.
Or something more combustible. It's just insane how bad it is, especially because no one knows they're getting it.
But 100,000
deaths.
We
have a responsibility because of the position that we've established because of the years of experience at Crossroads.
Do you know, and I think one of the things that we always try to do, and even in the teaching of the staff and stuff like that, is the culture of Crossroads, which is what you guys are talking about, I feel, the secret sauce kind of thing. So I started working for Crossroads in 2010. And so at that time, the people usually that we brought on as night managers, we called them then, were people that, quite frankly, had nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
You know, they needed their recovery process. Sometimes it was like fear at some point that if I leave here, I'm not going to do okay. You know, we had senior residents, we had night managers, and those types of things, which have evolved, like you were talking about, Jeff, evolved into what we have now. And I mean, sometimes we are successful hiring from without, you know, sometimes not so much, but we keep trying, like you were talking about, Adam, is we keep trying to figure out, you know, what is going to stick, what is going to work for our residents and the people that we're trying to help, you know?
I want to point out, too, one thing. I don't think Adam does either, and in fact, he makes it a point that there are sometimes, some positions manifestly must be hired professionally.
100%. Absolutely. 100%.
There might become a situation where I'd hire an MD who came through the program to be our medical manager, but
that's a little iffy, just like the accountant. It's kind of iffy.
And he or she probably knows that.
That's a different insurance policy.
She probably knows that. And, you know, from my coming back as a professional, you know, in my recovery, I have to deal with the same things, and I recognize, you might not want, because, you know, of my history, but I'm stronger for my history. We do have lots of people we do hire people who are great people.
Yes.
Who are just as passionate externally, maybe because they were exposed to other kinds of addictions. And we have lots of people that help us. It's not just our Crossroads College graduates.
Well, and you and I.
Crossroads College.
So for what we've done, you know, to me, I definitely credit Crossroads for saving my life, because when I came back from Montana, I don't know where I'd have been without Crossroads West. It was where I went for my recovery. So even though it was a male facility, it saved my life.
Well, to be fair, I mean, some of our counselors and to people who are not actively in recovery, or at least that same kind of recovery that we're in. But we hire people.
For sure.
Yeah, and they do a great job. And sometimes they're more passionate. I remember the one person in my recovery, in my rehab, who had 3 degrees, but no experience with it. We made fun of her, but she was passionate.
Mm-hmm.
And she cared. And that's really what we care about first and foremost.
It's all that matters in our company. Do you care? Do you care enough to...
And are you honestly care about it? Yeah.
Yes.
Do you honestly care to help change somebody's life or help facilitate that change? Nothing else matters.
Right.
You both have touched a lot on the organic model that Crossroads just kind of develops, and we've danced around it, and it just seems to crop back up every time we talk about it. Donna, you talked about the individuals we hire that might fear-based be scared to leave, right? That's the same individual that came in kicking and screaming day one and adapted to our culture and realized this is my safe space, so much so that they don't want to leave.
Yep.
Jeff, you talked about going to other treatment centers and nobody one day just said, oh, hey, we're going to do this community meeting thing because this is going to work for us, right?
Right.
Yeah. They probably were loading people up in the druggy buggy and lost 3 or 4 in a month and said, hey, we got to stop taking these people out. How do we fix this? And it organically, right? And here we are full circle that we're doing the same exact thing with a detox because we see the necessity of it. And the possibility of eliminating that air brings everything back organically, right?
Right. And in the other focus that... Lee and the staff are really looking at, are just what you mentioned before, the alternate delivery methods.
Sure.
It's not all going to be
right.
That's inpatient.
That's what we're looking toward the future. And there's going to be a lot of trial and error.
Yes.
We don't know how it's going to work. We don't know if you can really have the same secret sauce, but we know that the need is out there.
If it helps one person,
yes,
that secret sauce is still inside of it.
Agree.
And that's
we'd like to help more than one.
Yeah.
You know, when I was doing the Zoom meetings, when we first had this COVID thing start, I was doing like 8 of them a week.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of people. I had people from all over the world getting on these meetings. And then sometimes, because so many people started doing them, I would end up with just one person. But guess what they would say? A lot of times, I'm so glad you're here. And I'm like...
Just like a regular meeting.
Exactly. Yeah. I said, I'll read the steps. You read the traditions. We're going to do this just like a regular meeting. And we're going to then talk. Well, you have a topic. Let's talk about it. And you know what? We could always fill an hour. Always.
Mm-hmm.
So one person, 2 people, and 120.
We were on telehealth and talking about telehealth, and as was the standard traditional medical community before March 2020.
Yes.
But... I don't think anybody realized how much it could work with recovery until after we were doing meetings on Zoom.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing them. And I'm doing them with people, you know, I'm doing them in Ireland in the morning. And I'm going, you know, and back in Mississippi where I went to recovery and had a lot of my friends stayed around there. It's great. And it's not exactly the same, but life is change and we're learning how to change. Right. It'll be a slow transition and not a complete one probably ever, I don't think. But then again, I'm old, so I'm not allowed to, I can't see the future very well.
Right.
Well, I mean, the one thing that is unique about organizations like Crossroads is our entire mission is to put ourselves out of business.
Yeah.
Right.
And unfortunately, we're not. As you know, as admissions director, we are constantly full or close to full as far as inpatient. And that's why the alternative delivery and investing in whatever technology you need to invest in or other methods and other ideas. If anyone has an idea, put it forward. Say, this works.
Absolutely.
No one is unique, and we always like to hear the different ideas. And from the board, we always love hearing from the staff and from the people who are in the trenches and saying, this is what we're going through right now.
This is
what it looks like. And we sit there and say, wow, we never knew that. Thank you for letting us know. Because there's a lot that goes into the life of someone who's actually in Crossroads and someone actually who's working in Crossroads that we will never experience unless they tell us. And then we can at least partially understand what they went through.
Sure.
Right.
And it changes with every new epidemic of drug, you know, the nuances of recovery and how to relate to these people and what they go through in that initial detox changes with the nature of the drug.
Well, you know, I left Flower in 2017 and didn't even know what fentanyl was.
Yeah.
And now look at us. What percentage is it, Marcus, that comes in for fentanyl addiction? Yeah,
we're probably close to 80% right now.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's not higher.
Yeah.
And it may, very well may be.
Some traditional drunks in there thrown in there.
And your old school meth addicts. But
wow, they're dwindling too.
Yeah. Well, the meth is different now.
But meth and street heroin and stuff. I mean, they're putting fentanyl in the benzodiazepines that you buy on the street. The Xanax and stuff like that. You're getting it in everything. It's going to be a Slurpee.
You would think that's bad enough, but there was a report that I read. And I've heard it out of people's mouths. I just didn't know it was this prevalent.
Right.
There was 20 individuals that were getting on a flight to go on a trip in Pennsylvania that all had to be Narcan'd at the airport.
20 and, kids?
19, 20-year-old.
On one flight?
They were all showing up to the airport, and they all shared a joint before the flight.
What? One joint and took 20 of them out?
I find that that's amazing.
So it's not just benzos and method.
But first of all, there's lots of problems with that story. But the bottom line is the same. Because was it one joint?
Probably not. Was it one bag of weed? Probably. The moral of the story being that they are putting fentanyl on marijuana now.
Right, and it's in everything. And because it's cheap. It's a cheap additive.
And it's addictive.
Yeah.
So
and they keep coming back for more.
And the morbidity of it, in other words, that you taking it and dying is a lot higher than anything else ever, even heroin or anything. Yeah.
Right. So, Jeff, what was your aha moment that got you into treatment?
The judge said I had to go.
Well, sometimes that's the biggest aha one that you have.
I disagreed with him at the time.
As you should as a lawyer.
And we debated and went back and forth, and I eventually acquiesced.
And now you're glad you did.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I should thank him. I'm not gonna, but
absolutely. We're all glad he did.
The community at large is glad that I did it.
Right.
But you know what? I take that back. That's not true. I remember when my aha movement, ultimately, probably from the story I told you, would have had to come when I started to realize I want to be sober. Maybe, and this is a nice segue into another part of our program that I want to big up, our organization, is when I had the carnitas on Wednesday at George's Carnitas. It may be like, this is recovery? I can do this. We have $5 Mexican food and the best carnitas I've ever had.
Yep.
And I said, food and recovery.
Yes.
Why have we not thought of this before?
Uh-huh.
We have great food.
We have great food. The Crossroads 30 is what they call that.
Yeah.
And, instead of the freshman 30, it's the Crossroads 30.
Like they say, an army moves on their stomach, then feed them and they will come. So
absolutely. So for you, Adam, what do you think is the number one thing that you've seen change? We've talked a lot about the changes. Have you already touched on the number one change, you think, or is there something else?
I think what I've seen as the change is the training and development of all of the, what I'll call the managers and the staff of Crossroad under Lee's direction. When I first got here, I think every question in the building went to Lee.
Yes.
Our executive director. And he has developed a fine team of people around him to take a lot of that off of his back where, Lee is just, I think we call him our eye candy now when we bring him in because his group takes care of almost all the day-to-day activity. And I think that doing that while preserving the Crossroads way has been a very tough balancing act to do because to find people who are able and willing to take on the responsibilities but also preserve the Crossroads way has been a very fine balance.
Lee is integral to the to where we are.
Yes,
as an organization now, because it was probably him that saw all these things that it's like, oh my God, that's a great way to do it. Having people come in for meetings. I mean, it probably was before him, but he probably decided we can make this our model and for continuity. And he also is very good at delegating. He's created a structure He's overseen us in a period of exponential, and that I'm not using that word. It's a minimal sense.
Yes.
We've grown incredibly in the last 6 years.
Yes,
7 years, and he has created a structure to support it.
But what we haven't changed is the basic way of doing business.
Right.
We're still very conservative. We're very, very cost conscious. We have to protect this model with just all the vigor that we have is not to fall into a path where you just start, going off and, spending a bunch of money on people with a bunch of initials. We don't need that.
Exactly.
What we need to do is make sure we maintain the culture, but may also maintain the entire cross organization for the public that's what we're here for, is to serve the public.
That's why we're here, because we did the right things and the right things happened.
Yes.
So changing the why we do things would be a pretty stupid way to both effectuate our mission policy and do business from a board of. So let's stick to what's brought us here.
And, right.
Yes.
And that's, and we've, great things have happened because we did things the right way. Although I can't take any credit for that. I came along and just happened to be along for the blow up. I just happened to be on the other side of the balloon. But I can see how what got us there, and sticking to what got us there.
Yeah, and I think another thing too that we didn't touch on, I'm going to say now, is that the people that have come in as clients that have gone to up the ladder to working for us and now are independently licensed substance use disorder counselors. Mm-hmm. So we have so many of those that have master's degrees now that came up through Crossroads. What an amazing tribute.
It is awesome.
Yes.
It is awesome to see guys like Fleetwood Mac here. I'd seen him before in the program around from the meetings and stuff. And he was still, you're pretty good at sobriety early on. I don't know if you fumbled or not, but he rose fast. Guys that I sat next to when they first came in are now, in the corporate offices running the show.
Yep.
They're high level managers. Yeah. Right. It's an impressive group that Marcus is a representative of.
Yes.
And the organization takes full credit for that.
but you see the evolution of these managers, and I think the higher they go, the more they serve.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's really the model that is developing, is they become more servants as they get higher. It's not this. There is a hierarchy. There's a necessity for that.
Yes.
Who's in charge? Where's the buck stop? But the higher they're going, the more they're serving others. And that's really, when you look at it, even if you bring somebody from the outside, they have to have that ingredient ingrained in them to be able to be successful at Crossroads.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If they don't have it, they may do great things, but it just won't work in the long run.
What's
not
their
motivation? Longevity. Right.
Well, what's the motivation?
And it comes from, Mr. Piosky, from the top down of, he trains his managers who then train us and so on and so forth, that as we've repeated multiple times, you do the right thing and good things will happen. And going into a situation knowing that you are doing the next right thing awards you a confidence that is seldom in other businesses.
There's one more element to that you forgot. There's do the right things for the right reasons.
And yes.
The
right.
And that's what you guys have done. And you're an example of that. And I commend you. And you should be proud of yourself, as we are of you.
Thank you.
Yes.
So for those of you that are listening out there, if you need help, as you've been listening to our board of directors, members of our board and our president, if you need help, Crossroads will help you. Give Marcus and his team a call at 602-263-5242 or visit our website at thecrossroadsinc.org, because if you need help, we will find a way to help you. Thank you guys so much for being here and enlightening us with your story and all of the knowledge that you have as being part of the board of directors for Crossroads. We appreciate you. And Marcus, you were bomb. Thanks for joining me and being my co-host today. I appreciate
you. Thank you. Thank you. It was an honor to be here.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to Recovery On Air, the official podcast of Crossroads Addiction Rehabilitation, with your host, Donna Alexander. Join us next time as we continue our candid discussions about addiction and recovery. Listen 24/7 anytime to this or any of our shows online at starworldwidenetworks.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.